This feature of the Science News Radio Network is coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas. Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
And welcome back. So good to be with you again as we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free, online, and webcast at promiseoftomorrow.biz. And we've got a very exciting show today, as a matter of fact. We're going to visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from somebody a lot of us never heard of, visit our fountain of useless information we keep here on the set in the second half of the program. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. But just a little bit, I'm going to introduce you to Peter Forster and Nick Jacoby. Nick Jacoby is a lecturer and research associate at Penn State University, and Peter is Associate Dean, Online Education and Information Technology at Penn State University. Now, Penn State is going to be featured at the IEEE 2015 International Conference on Homeland Security, April 14th through 16th, at the Westin Hotel in Waltham, Massachusetts. That's Boston, for those of you who are not familiar with Waltham. Waltham, Massachusetts, of course, is the home of the famous Waltham watch that was developed during the Civil War that really kind of revolutionized timepieces that made it affordable that anybody could afford to have. So Waltham, Massachusetts is a historical place, as is Boston. That's the famous historic international conference on homeland security is where it's held. Key technical gaps closely examined, and the plenary speaker this year is Dr. Reginald Brothers. He's Undersecretary of Homeland Security for Science and Technology. This is going to be a very, very exciting conference, so I hope you'll plan to attend. You can find out more about it at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you're going to see a link to IEEE, and that'll take you right to the website, and you'll see how the conference is going to feature government officials, systems integrators, research laboratories, all kinds of people attend, investors, small businesses, academic institutions. And Penn State University is one that's being featured this year. So Nick Jacoby and Peter Forster have some fascinating things to discuss, and we're going to get a preview of that in just a few minutes right here on this program. Peter Forster, his research is in projects related to counterterrorism, risk management, criminal operations, data fusion threw me for just a little bit. I had to ask him about it. He explains what that's all about. Counterinsurgency, you know, the whole thing, civil-military relations, how terrorists integrate and use new technologies and their impact. Peter is also the co-author and contributing author to books on NATO's military burden and intervention, including most recently a book, A Multinational Military Intervention, that he co-authored with Stephen Chimbala and then another book, A Strategy of War. His current focus is evolution of terrorist use of online and mobile technologies in a variety of aspects. So, you're not going to want to miss it right here in the Science News Radio Network. So, let's get right to it. What do you say? Okay, this time I want to introduce you to two really fascinating people, Nick Jacoby and Peter Forster. They're at Penn State University, and they're featured, Penn State is featured at the IEEE Homeland Security Technology Conference going on in the middle of April, and we're really lucky to have them. They're going to give us kind of a preview of the things they're doing. Peter Forster is Associate Dean, Online Education and Information Technology. His research on projects related to counterterrorism, civil and military relations and how terrorists integrate and use new technologies and their impact. And I understand that Nick is also a partner with him on that. Welcome to the program, gentlemen.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be with you.
Yes, great to be here.
Now, are you both speaking at the conference, or just one or the other of you?
I believe, unfortunately, I think, Nick, you will be the one presenting, because I actually have another commitment out of the country that has come up that week that I can't get out of.
But I'll certainly be there, and I'm looking forward to presenting a little bit of our work and meeting with folks at the conference.
All right, well, give us a preview. What do we get to look forward to?
Nick, do you want me to start on this? Or, okay. Well, I think we have a very unique presentation coming up on a project that we've been working on collaboratively for a couple years with law enforcement in Pennsylvania. And the project is really a student-run project. We do the supervision of the students, but what came about here was a request from law enforcement in Pennsylvania to get an idea of how 18 to 22-year-olds look at specific problems and how they might apply technology to help law enforcement in resolving those problems. And in this case, we're looking at the subject of human trafficking. Pennsylvania is both a destination state for human trafficking as well as a transfer or transit state for human trafficking, and it's become a serious concern within the state. And that's the problem set that law enforcement in Pennsylvania has asked us to take a look at.
All right, now human trafficking, we're talking about illegal aliens coming in from, let's say, South America or whatever. Are we talking about young people driven into prostitution? What is the problem here?
Well, that's a great question, and we should specify. Human trafficking can refer to both of those groups. However, the focus that we are looking at is basically the sex trade, if you will. So it is young people being forced, being enticed into prostitution, and how they are being moved around.
All right, so that's the problem. Now, you've been asked to come up with solutions and involve, did you say, 18 to 22-year-olds? Why that age group?
Well, we're looking at our students, the 18 to 22-year-olds, as potential analysts. And the problem space that we're trying to identify is, if we think like the old gray-haired folks that we are, and we think about the solutions that we come up with, well, we're going to get the same kind of solutions that law enforcement already has. So we're looking at those college students and how their ability as digital natives would allow them to look at the problem differently than we would look at it. And they've come up with some rather interesting technological perspectives to address that particular problem. So rather than throwing more manpower at the problem to analyze data, they're using interesting technologies to come up with those solutions.
Well, the idea is then that the people that are the perpetrators of these crimes are resorting to more sophisticated means of hiding their activities, I guess, and so the young people apparently, or let's say we suspect, are probably on to the latest in technologies, and so you want to tap into that way of thinking, or is it just a whole new revolutionary way of looking at things?
I would say it's really a combination of both. I'm not sure that we can say that the perpetrators are using a lot of new things. They certainly have embraced, and we see this across all illicit kind of groups, embrace new technologies and use them. But I really would argue, and then I'll defer to Nick, but I would argue that really what we're looking at is, how do young people look at technology to solve the problem? So they might be using the same websites they've been using for 10 years in this case, but it may be how we derive information or are able to capture and then analyze information from those websites that's a little different.
Okay, now this leads me then to ask about the new iPhone lockout. So the people can put information on their phones and it becomes totally impenetrable. Is that going to be a hindrance to the things that you're doing?
Well, we see the number of technologies that are in use in the human trafficking space as being a lot of different websites that a trafficker might use to advertise access to the trafficked person, especially in the sex trade. So there are a variety of different sites that exist out there for people to advertise on. Our question for our students is, if we were to access that data and capture it, how would we analyze it and come up with very interesting ways to represent that data? So we're looking at social network analysis, we're looking at textual analysis, we're looking at affect, we're looking at the tone of the language that's used in those advertisements to figure out, is there a relationship between multiple ads? Now, of course, if those advertisements are going across different kinds of devices, say cell phone directly, you're absolutely right, that would be problematic. But that's not what we're seeing in this particular environment, at least not yet.
Okay, so we're largely talking about websites then, and what you're trying to do is get a key to tip law enforcement off that a particular website is acting in a certain manner, and that is suspicious and deserves investigation. Is that what I'm hearing?
Sure.
Well, it's more. I would say it's a more at a strategic level. We're obviously not a law enforcement agency, and in all reality, to see something like that, we're probably not going to be able to respond in a timely enough fashion. But what we're trying to look at and trying to get a sense of is, what is the network? And of particular interest, for example, from law enforcement's perspective, is some of the things we do with very similar in counterterrorism is, who is talking to whom, and then can we build out a network around who these people are, hoping to find what I would term the critical node. In the case of human trafficking, that might well be the handler of the victims in this case, so that we can begin to pinpoint who those people are and help law enforcement identify them so they can be taken out. The goal being that then the network will collapse in that kind of situation.
Okay, so Nick, I guess if you're making the presentation at the IEEE Homeland Security Technology Conference, you're going to be giving some sort of a demonstration on how these things can be achieved. Is that right?
Well, right. We're going to start from this is how we would do it in an old school kind of environment, and we're starting from a very manual process. How might we have a group of people go through and analyze the network nodes between a variety of different articles? And we've done that, and we've beaten our head against the wall just like we would expect to. And frankly, that hurts. So in changing that mentality from this very manual process into an automated process, or at least a semi-automated process, what kinds of gains can we have in the processing of data, in the analysis of data, if we add a little bit of the right technology at the right place? And that's where our paper goes, and it starts from that very manual process. And certainly in the presentation, there will be a number of the different tools that we've used that we've found to be useful in terms of the analysis side of things, that we're hoping our law enforcement partners will look at and say, oh, wow, that's something we could actually do too. Let's stop beating our head against the wall.
So this is really an ongoing process. It isn't something that you just can say, okay, look, this is the model, and this is what we're going to do. You have to continually be refining the model. Is that right?
Absolutely. This is it's a very dynamic environment. You made reference earlier to perpetrators using new technologies. We have found that a lot of this does transpire through websites here, but certainly we would be interested in an ongoing kind of process to get a sense of what's going on perhaps in social media around this. Nick mentioned some of the language things we're looking at. We're trying to understand what is the lexicon that's used, and who might be the individuals that we may at some point get to a point where we can say, oh, okay, here's a conversation going on in Twitter, for example, and what does this mean in terms of human trafficking?
Okay, so the adulteration of the language, in other words, picking up keywords that may mean one thing to an old geezer like me and mean something entirely different to someone that they're trying to communicate with in the sex trade. That's part of it, too?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, and you're going to be teaching these things and developing these programs at Penn State University so that law enforcement will be able to have access to it. That's the message that you want to drive home at the conference, is that right?
Well, I think what we want to do is assist law enforcement in thinking about how they might use some of the things that we do. Certainly, ultimately, one of our goals would be is to be able to say, look how we prepare students. Maybe this would be a person you'd like to consider hiring to work for you. I mean, that's part of our goal, is right to educate our students and give them an opportunity at a career. We will not be working for law enforcement per se. That's not within our charter as an institution. We can't be kind of a hub for the State College Police, for example.
Okay. Well, Peter, I noticed a couple of things that you're working on in your research. One is data fusion. That sounds like a pretty broad term to me. Can you explain that a little bit?
Right. I can take that question.
Sure, go ahead, Nick.
In the multi-sensor data fusion process comes from a military kind of environment, and in the traditional sense, if you can imagine trying to find a submarine under the ocean, you might have sonobuoys and destroyers, you know, floating on the surface, and airplanes dropping buoys across the environment where we think the submarine is. And all that data has to somehow come back to a central location and be fused together. And there's disparate relationships between time and place and the type of the sensor and what it's tasked to do. And we can use those same kinds of technologies of fusing data from different places. So in this kind of environment, we might fuse data and say, well, let's look at data from an environment like Craigslist, for instance. And what would that relationship of that data have with another kind of social media site that's popular in human trafficking, and that's called Backpage? So can we identify different articles that are being posted in those different venues and put them together and maybe tie that together with what's happening in the same concept on Twitter? Might we see a relationship between them? There's going to be some temporal differences between what happens on one site to the next, as well as the format of the data that we're getting from each site is going to be a little bit different. But the same concepts in multi-sensor data fusion can still apply.
Okay, so it's really taking a bunch of data, being able to find out how it relates to each other and pick out the stuff that's really useful. That's basically what you're talking about.
Right. Yeah, exactly, and it even goes beyond that. I mean, we've looked at things, for example, geographic proximity of hotels, strip clubs, these kinds of things. So you can also integrate geographic data into this and lay it all on a map and begin to see what kind of picture comes out from the data.
Well, you gentlemen are fascinating, and I know you have to both get to class pretty soon because you've got other obligations besides talking to this dense reporter right here on this end of the phone. So I know that we're going to have to put the wraps on this, but before we go, could each of you give us kind of a look into the future, what you see maybe 5 or 10 years down the road and where things are going?
Go ahead, Nick. I see retirement, but
I see a long career and certainly training students to use data analytic tools, whether they're geographic, whether they're cyber tools, whether they're tools we can identify hard pieces of information or even soft data and fuse them together to present to a human analyst to make decisions and support decision makers to support their decisions to identify different kinds of things, whether it's in human trafficking, in terrorism, or in crime. And these new technologies that exist today need to get into the hands of law enforcement, and that's where we see our charge in being able to train new students and be able to do interesting research projects to assist law enforcement to use those tools so that we don't have to continually do things in the old-fashioned, very human-intensive, human work unit-intensive environment.
Yeah, I with the ubiquity of information technologies, this is not something that's going to go away, and I think everybody's aware that the big term today is big data. The real question is, how do we begin to gather, sort, prioritize, and then understand all of this information that's out there to enhance our to enhance our situational awareness around specific events, but also enhance our overall understanding of how a variety of groups, organizations may operate in a different environment. And I would concur exactly with Nick that this is nothing that's going to go away. There's a long-term opportunity here in both educating but also researching on how to do this. Technologies will change. I think our real goal here is to put into place processes that allow us to continue to adapt the process of improving situational awareness, decision-making, contextual awareness as those technologies change.
All right, but cyber warfare, just one last question before we get out of here. Cyber warfare, is it going to get worse, or are we going to get a handle on it to where it becomes non-existent?
I would say, and from the people I talk to, it's going to get worse. Everybody I talk to says, if you want to tell a kid where to go and get an education, tell them it's cyber, because this is only going to expand. Now, the one thing I will caution on, the term cyber warfare, that has multiple connotations to multiple people. And I think one of the things we do have to begin to do is define what we mean by a variety of terms. But certainly the ability to take data to cause disruptions and things like that in a cyber world is only going to grow.
Okay.
I'll add to that just a little bit and suggest that our current understanding in cyber warfare is rather defensive and rather at the packet level. It's way down in the weeds. Programs like ours start there and then add the intel process on top of the packet level data and try to understand things like attribution and intent and look at what the actors are trying to accomplish. And so we're trying to get out of the weeds of the individual packet data. There's job security for every one of our students who understand both things at the data level as well as at the broader geopolitical level. And that's not going to change anytime in the near future as far as we can tell.
Absolutely.
All right, you're good guys. Appreciate it so much. Thank you very, very much, both of you.
Thanks, Carl.
Thank you. You take care now.
You too.
Bye-bye. Well, we're going to talk to those two guys for a lot longer than we could. They had to rush off because both of them teach class, and so it was a very tight window that we had to talk to Nick Jacoby, who's a lecturer and research associate at Penn State University, and Peter Forster, who's the associate dean online education and information technology. Both are going to be guest speakers at the IEEE 2015 International Conference on Homeland Security. I guess really Nick Jacoby told me he was going to be the primary presenter at that conference. That's going to be at the Westin Hotel in Waltham, Massachusetts, April 14th through 16th next spring. So you're certainly going to want to make that. You can find out more information on that particular conference at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a link to the website for the 2015 IEEE International Conference on Homeland Security Technologies. Peter Forster, Nick Jacoby, Penn State University. I used to have a friend at Penn State. No, hold on just a second. That was the state Penn, pardon me. All right. Coming up, the next half hour, we're going to hear from an old friend, Sir Harry Croteau. And he's going to explain to us how he learned that he and won the Nobel Prize. For work that was done in 1985, in the 90s, he and Bob Curl and Rick Smalley from Rice University discovered carbon-60, and they're going to tell us, he's going to tell us all about how he learned that he had won the Nobel Prize. All coming up in the next half hour, so please stick around. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all the wisdom of mankind. In the Den of Strangers, will we meet today?
Ralph Waldo Emerson. A foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds. adored by little statesmen and philosophers and divines.